You're listening to Ain't the Right Radio, the official podcast from Orzopedia.com, your community source for Final Fantasy XIV. And now, your hosts for Ain't the Right Radio, Aniro, Chinchilla, and Fusion X. Hello, you're listening to Aetherite Radio, the official podcast from Orzopedia.com. We are a podcast devoted to bringing you the latest and most up-to-date information on Final Fantasy XIV. Now, being that this is our first episode, there's something I feel like I should explain to you. We are a collection of podcasters from Final Fantasy XI come together to bring you the latest and most up-to-date information on Final Fantasy XIV. I'm Aniro from Limit Break Radio. Joining me are Fusion X and Chinchilla from Pet Food Alpha. Now, again, being that this is a podcast, something that is really important is interaction and interactivity. And we've set up a bunch of ways that you can get a hold of us and interact with the show.
The easiest way to interact with the show and contact us overall is via email. And you can do that by emailing us at podcast@orzopedia.com. We will have forums set up on the Orzopedia forums. We'll have a podcast section. We'll have a place for episode posts where you can comment on each episode. We will also have a feedback forum. So if you have any suggestions for the show, that's where you can send them if you don't want to do it via email. As the show, you know, grows and expands, you know, we may add more areas to the forums. Mm-hmm. But for now, it's, you know, pretty basic. You know, we are part of Orzopedia, so there's a lot of other sections in the forums. So forums and email is the best way to get a hold of us.
Absolutely. So we're here to talk about Final Fantasy XIV. And, you know, this is a game that that we were introduced to at the 2009 E3 conference. And I got to tell you, as a longtime fan of Final Fantasy XI, so excited for this game. I can't tell you how excited, and every little tidbit of information has just really been fascinating.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, I can still remember watching the Sony press conference. This is when 14 was announced, and I was talking to Ganyman, who's the admin over at Orzopedia. And, you know, we were watching the Sony press conference streaming, and you know, they talked a little bit about 13, and then, you know, Jack Trenton over at Sony says something about, but we also have something about the next project they're working on. And me and Ganny were talking, we're like, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
The trailer comes up, it starts talking, it's like, you know, a land brought forth by mighty gods, and that mighty gods part, I'm like, this is it, has to be the new thing.
It's gotta be it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chin, how did you feel when you first saw the trailer?
I was just excited, man. You see the thing about 13, and you're like, that looks pretty sweet. What's next? Come on. And they announced 14, and the video they showed was really cool. You can tell it's just going to be something that you're going to want to get sucked into and play and enjoy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, watching the trailer for the first time, like, you know, just leading up to it, like, you knew it was Rapture, it was Project Rapture,
yep.
The MMO that they've been working on for 5 years.
Yeah, we've been hearing about this for so long. Yeah,
yeah. And then at the end, it's just like Final Fantasy 14, then little like strip under that just shows up. It's like online, and you're just like, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's now funny because it's, you get like the, I don't know about you guys, but playing 11. You know, when expansions came out that really interest you, or any game that comes out, you kind of get like the warm, fuzzy feeling, like excited, like I want to play this, and it definitely delivered.
Yeah, I love the way that they do their trailers for that kind of stuff, because they kind of build it up, and then right at the end, they just have like the name, and you're just like, yeah. I want that.
Oh, absolutely. They do a great job with their marketing, and I mean, you know, the excitement level, the anticipation from both the pre-existing Final Fantasy XI community and, you know, a wider video game audience, a post World of Warcraft audience, if you will, is very excited about this. So it looks like this is going to be a very big launch for this game, and we're going to be following all the way up until the launch. And once the game launches, we're going to have a brand new formatted show for you
And hopefully we're going to be able to cover this just as well as we were able to cover Final Fantasy XI. So I know that that I'm excited about this, and man, we've got so much info to talk about.
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of the stuff we're going to talk about is from the update of the official North American website for yes. Final Fantasy XIV. Seeing it as how this is our first show, we wanted to do just a little teeny recap from E3, just a couple things to mention here. At the Sony press conference, it was announced that Final Fantasy XIV at launch will only be available on PlayStation 3. You know, this isn't completely excluding the Xbox 360. It's possible that, you know, 14 will come out for that at a later date, but at launch, it is a console exclusive to PS3.
Yeah, but it will be available also for the PC as well. But yes, you're right, console exclusive to the PS3.
Yeah, it's not just exclusive to PS3. A lot of people heard that and they're like, it's not going to be on PC. No, it's console exclusive.
Yeah.
So it will be on PC and PS3 at launch. And speaking of the launch, it will be a global launch. It will be released everywhere the same day. It's not going to be, you know, with what happened with 11, where Japan had it like a year before everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, and then even then, like, it took them quite a while, even after that, for them to do the German and French version. So this time, everybody gets it. So
yeah, they've been developing it from day one to be a global game, and seeing as the success that they've had worldwide with Final Fantasy XI, and you know, you've got to think that the you know, the developers have learned a lot of lessons from 11, and this is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing too to mention, I know for years, ever since, you know, we first got wind that they were developing 14, you know, rumors were coming out like, oh, it's 11 too, you know. They've said that 14 takes place in a completely new world. The only connection that it has is that you can actually recreate your character from 11 if you so choose.
Yes.
That way you still kind of feel like you have, like, you know, you're still connected in sense to your avatar. But that's it. That's the only kind of connection that 14 has to Vanadil or 11. But kind of a fun fact, and I thought this was really interesting. During one of the interviews at E3, Hiromichi Tanaka, who is the producer of 11 and also 14, said that originally they wanted to put a door in the Mog House that would allow you to exit into Heidelin, which is the world that 14 takes place in.
Mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting. And, you know, it's kind of weird because I was playing Final Fantasy VII the other day, and there was this part where I forget the town, it was like Medeal or something. There's like a door painted on the wall, and you try and open it, and the guy's like, oh, it's just painted on the, you know, it's not a real door, but I'm hoping that someday that, you know, that door can take you to another world. I'm like, I've heard this somewhere before.
Yeah.
Like, that's really, I saw that, I'm like, that's kind of weird.
Well, one of the things that I think it definitely should be mentioned is that out of all of the interviews, something that the developers have stressed is that they developed 14 with the intention to have players that already play 11 be playing 14 as well. So they're mm-hmm. trying to make as many ways to interact with that 11 community as possible. They've stated right. that you know, you'll be able to send messages not through necessarily play online. I know that they've also said that they've desired to get rid of that service, mm-hmm. and it will not be applied to Final Fantasy 14, but you will be able to have communication between the two games, which I think that that does and gives some incentive to try to be maintaining both games at the same time.
Yeah, that was something that was mentioned. I believe it was the Premier Sight Summit last year. 14 won't have play online, which is probably good, but they are interested in carrying over your play online friend list.
Yes.
So you won't lose you know, communication with any of your friends in 11, or dare I say Tetramaster. but you know, they want people to play both games, and one of the ways that I think that they're kind of helping push this is one of the things that they've said a lot is that they want 14 to be a lot more casual. They want it so, you know, even if you have just, you know, half hour or an hour, you can go in and you can do stuff either with friends or by yourself. And I think, you know, right off the bat, you know, that's a really good thing. You know, for anyone that started off with 11, it can be very party oriented before they introduce some of the new things in the game, like Fields of Valor. You know, it's, you know, once you hit 10, you got to go to the dunes and you got to party. But with 14, it sounds like, you know, they're really hoping to, you know, make a good game that, you know, anyone can jump into.
For sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, one of the other things that was mentioned, and I think that this is a pretty big deal, being a super fan myself.
Yeah.
Is that it has been announced that Nobuo Uematsu will be composing all of the music for Final Fantasy XIV. Fans of Final Fantasy XI will know that he only composed a very few tracks for Final Fantasy XIV, one of them being Ron Fair, as well as what else? The Chocobo theme.
The main theme. XI. I think he did Airship.
I think he did do Airship, but it has been announced that he will be doing the entire score, which is really cool.
Yeah, and one thing that's really cool about this too, it was said that right now, I mean, these have been going on for a while. There's a concert series for Final Fantasy. It's called Distant Worlds Music from Final Fantasy.
Oh yeah,
And it's been said that Nobuo Uematsu is working on adapting multiple pieces from Final Fantasy 14 for the concerts.
Well, hopefully we'll hear some of that music before the game is launched.
I hope so.
I
haven't gotten my tickets for Chicago yet, but I'm hoping that maybe, just maybe, we'll get something, but
who knows?
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Exactly.
Keep up. We can only hope. But that was the majority of the information that was released out at E3 2009. Not a whole lot, but I mean, definitely enough to get us salivating and thinking and wishing and hoping. And in that time since then, there have been a lot more pieces of information that have dropped about Final Fantasy 14. So one of the big sources has been specifically the Japanese media. You know, publications, print publications, still doing quite well over in Japan, especially ones connected with gaming. So what did we hear about Final Fantasy 14 in the Japanese media?
Well, it was actually kind of interesting when it started, because there were two magazines that came out. I believe it was 2 weeks ago now. It was Dengeki PlayStation and the Weekly Famitsu. And images of these magazines were leaked before the release. So, you know, we were seeing all these images and we're like, whoa, like,
where are these
this?
Coming from?
You know, So, you know, we had translated what we could. And then once the magazines were released, and I gotta give props to Square Enix for this, because one of the huge issues that the Final Fantasy XI community has had is, you know, the Japanese media, they get all these, you know, dev team interviews, and we usually never see any of that unless Elmer Corinth translates it.
Right.
But what they did this time around is, as soon as those magazines were on sale in Japan, they updated the Japanese website, not giving all the information because they wanted you to buy the magazines. They also updated the North American website with all of the information released in the Japanese media, which I think that was great.
Absolutely.
They didn't update the European
site. Talk about
putting
your best foot forward on releasing information.
I'm still wondering why they didn't update the European site. I don't think they still have. My best guess to that is they're waiting for Gamescom, which is going to start here August 19th, I believe.
So, coming up real soon.
You know, and it seems weird that they would, you know, release all this information, you know, if they were going to make an appearance at Gamescom. So my guess is that we will, you know, have more information at Gamescom, because it's, you know, it wouldn't make sense to, you know, say, okay, you know, here's all this news and stuff, and then just show it at Gamescom. Like, okay,
yeah,
you know, we already know this. You know, it doesn't make sense for them to go to Germany and show off 14 unless there's something new, really.
Yeah. I imagine that that they probably have plenty to show us. You know, some of the things that have been released on the Final Fantasy 14 official North American site have been things like screenshots. So we clearly see that they have developed at least enough of this to start presenting us with in-game screenshots.
Absolutely.
So I think the next step would probably be in-game play, if not possibly combat video, which I would be very anxious to see.
Yeah.
How about a beta date? I know that's kind of reaching up there, but
here's my prediction. Okay. And this, you know, don't quote me on this. It may or may not happen, but this is just my educated guess. We had the announcement here at E3 back in, what was that, June, July? And then we get, you know, a month later, we get, you know, a big chunk of information in Japan just via the press. And then we have Gamescom. You know, at this point, we know quest systems, cities, classes that you can play as. Really, the next logical step would be gameplay.
Yeah.
There's, you know, I mean, there is some information, you know, about the things that I just mentioned that has not been released, you know, some information on a few more of the city states.
Yeah.
But, you know, really, I think the next thing they need to do is show any kind of gameplay. You know, it could be a guy walking around in a field for all I care.
Yeah.
Everyone would be like, whoa, you know, look at that grass. That grass is amazing. But, you know, and then I think after that, Tokyo Game Show is coming up in September. And I think that's when we're going to
get be huge,
you know, something about a beta.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's
true,
we're going to announce a beta early next year or something. I think beta will definitely be
a topic. Yeah.
It'll be given some attention at TGS.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Well, I know, Corinth, I believe, from staff is, planning on going. So, we'll make sure to get her on here, so she can talk to us about that. I believe there were a few people in the forums, talking about going to Gamescom. So we'll find that thread and keep an eye on it. And, hopefully, we'll get enough information released from that. And, that'll be episode 2. So, keep an eye out for that, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. But there was a lot of content that was, released through the Japanese press and through the official North American site, that, you know, we should probably, you know, begin to wade through this will be, you know, the foundation of the game that I'm sure that we will all one day play, enjoy, and love. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a good place to start would be the races. I mean, that's really where anything begins. That's the first thing that you see. Character creation is the very, very first part of any MMO. So, you know, let's talk some races here.
All right. First up, we have the Elizen, which is going to be the Elven race. And it says on the website that they used to be the only race in Orzea. Like, they were, you know, kind of there first. And so that, you know, they feel that, you know, their prominence was ordained by the gods. And, you know, because of that, they have a very high sense of honor and pride, which kind of leads me to believe they're still kind of the same stuck-up guys that they are in Down a Deal.
Yeah, probably.
You know, they have sensitive hearing. And they also share a past of warfare with the Higher, who are the Humes. We'll get into them in a little bit. They currently coexist with everybody, but there's an exception, and that would be the reclusive Duskwhite Elizen, which leads me to believe that maybe there's kind of like a rogue group of Elizen or something kind of roaming around that still hates
ready to shank you or something.
Who knows? Like, that's kind of...
It makes me wonder, you know, like, is that going to be somehow attached to a storyline? Is that going to be, you know, a distinction between the races? Because what's interesting, and, you know, we'll see a little bit more of this when we talk about the Higher, but it seems that instead of... you know, with Final Fantasy XI, we had a lot of the races warring against each other, that mm-hmm. races are even warring against themselves in Orzea. And that is really interesting to me, because, you know, having internal conflict, you know, within one's own, you know, within one's own, I guess, homogeneous group. Is I find that very you know, very compelling. Well, and I'd love to see what they, you know, they do a really good job of that with you know, with storylines like Final Fantasy XII, where, you know, they present a large scale conflict in a very interesting and fascinating way. And I wonder how much of that is going to be carried over to 14.
Well, I think one of the interesting points, too, when they describe each race, it seems like there's two groups or clans or something. Yeah. You know, I don't know how you want to word that. Like, you know, the Elizan, we have, obviously, there's, you know, a group that exists peacefully, you know, with the Hire. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's the Duskwhite Elizan who seem to be, you know, angry for some reason or, you know, another.
we don't know yet why.
They're malcontents.
Yeah. That's what it is.
But I mean, think about, like, if you could join up with them, like the, you know, the Duskwhite Elizan and be one of those. And, you know, instead of like a city zone being a safe haven, like, you know, a series of small outposts are your safe havens and city zones are really dangerous for you. I mean, right. that kind of thing seems really cool to me.
Yeah. And that was one of the things.
Think about that. That would be pretty cool.
That was one of the things that was addressed in one of the magazines, and we'll, you know, we spread a lot of these little kind of Q&A type of things throughout the show here instead of just addressing them all and then going into the site content. It doesn't make any sense. But one of the things that they had talked about or had asked the dev team was if clan affiliation is going to play a part in the game, because, you know, it seems like, you know, each race has at least kind of like two separate groups that, you know, are a part of it. And they said it's a secret.
Oh, then that means they're planning something.
And then thus it begins, the dev team keeping secrets again. This will be, yeah.
Of course.
Clan affiliation is the secret to absolute virtue.
There you go.
Next up, we have the Lalafell, which are the new Tarus.
And they look pretty creepy.
They look a little taller.
They're creepy.
Like they...
They're creepy. They're adorable.
Their body structure is a little weirder. Like,
they're creepy, like porcelain dolls creepy.
Yeah.
Children of the Corn.
They're all like smiling and happy. So it's like, I don't know if I should be like creeped out. It looks like they're having fun, but
they're smiling at me with their dead eyes.
It's like the evil clown smile. That's what. Like, get some face paint on there. Give them a balloon animal, and you have nightmares for a year right there, man. But,
obviously, the Lalafell for our Final Fantasy XI fans are kind of a Tartara counterpart,
and they are they're originally a group of agriculturalists who inhabited islands of the South Seas. It says they're one of the more populous races and are well established in Orzea. They remain averse to cold climates, and they have highly developed and cunning intellects, which kind of, you know, seems like they're going to be the kind of intelligent, almost, you know, more leaning towards mage type class like they were in 11. But that, you know, storyline wise, that may make sense. But one of the things that was mentioned is that there won't be as big of a stat difference between races as there was in Final Fantasy 11. The dev team, you know, has said that they want players to make the characters that they want to play. You know, they don't want to have you be
scars cool.
like oh, you
want to
be a mage, you should probably be a Taru, or, you know, like, no.
That is really cool. I'm glad that they're doing that. But one of the ways that they may balance that out is, if you notice this, one of the lines that they tack onto here is they remain adverse to cold climates. And one of the things that they've talked about with the environment is that there's going to be a more naturally occurring weather and climates depending on, you know, where you go in the topography of Orzea. And so, you know, you might see, if, you know, take, for example, if you take a Lalafell to a very cold place, you may actually see an impact on performance as a result.
Thinking something along those lines.
That's really interesting.
Yeah,
you know, the environment have an effect on your character. I mean, we've seen this in 11 with chocobo racing.
Yep.
You know, if it's raining or if it's muddy, you know, your chocobo may be like, oh crap, you know, and not perform as well.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting to see them apply this just to, you know, general play though.
Yeah, absolutely. So absolutely.
For sure.
maybe movement speed or who knows. There's so much they could do. Like, even speculating, I feel kind of wrong because, you know,
you don't want to build it up.
They're going to come out with total crazy stuff that you weren't even thinking of, and it's just going to be awesome regardless.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt at all.
The next race we have are the Hyre, which is the Humes. And they make up the largest population in Orzea. And they arrived in three migratory waves. And they're pretty technologically advanced, it sounds like. They brought with them some sophisticated technology.
And
they've spearheaded many advances in Orzean civilization. And it's said that they have a variety of languages and social institutions due to the lack of solidarity and group cohesion, which is kind of interesting. You know, and again, it kind of starts to split up a little bit. And they say that there are two groups of Hyres that exist: Highlanders, who reside in mountainous areas, and Midlanders, who reside in lower elevations.
Again, another interesting line in that description is the addressing of languages. You know, something that has been done in other online games, for example, Star Wars Galaxies, before they, you know, went and kind of chewed that game up. There, you know, if you were a Wookiee talking to, you know, some other race in the Star Wars, I don't know Star Wars, but, you know, you couldn't, there was a communication barrier, and if you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to communicate, there was a skill that you had to actually skill up to learn different languages. Now, we've seen some of this in even the Final Fantasy universe, and, you know, the most immediate thing that comes to mind is the Albed from Final Fantasy X.
That's what I was going to say,
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it would be interesting if there would be language barriers on top of, you know, the regional differences, and how would that affect communication and gameplay, and even, you know, things like party and link shell chat.
That could be really interesting. I mean, hopefully it's not a system where it's like, oh, you found out what O in, like, you know, Hyre is now. And so, like, anytime you talk to Hyre, you just see, like, a bunch of gibberish and then an O.
Yeah, right,
like,
exactly. Yeah, there's, I mean, you know, that way would be very tedious, but I'm sure that there are other ways that you can, you know, enable that to be a little bit more of a smooth transition. But, you know, it's definitely an interesting, you know, it takes their idea, because they've really stressed this. The developers have really stressed the idea of personal character development. It takes that to a whole nother level when you start putting, you know, regional restrictions and cultural differences, cultural clashes. It makes things a whole lot more complicated, and therefore a whole lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just another element of customization. One of the things that, you know, Final Fantasy XI got a lot of hate for was the lack of customization for your character. And, you know, this time around, there's going to be a lot more of it. You know, hair color, eye color, skin color, are all things that they said you'll be able to choose. I think even face was one.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a lot of customization. And then on top of that, you know, it's looking like you'll be able to maybe, you know, affiliate yourself with a clan, and then, you know, probably a city state on top of that. So, I mean, there's a lot.
Fascinating stuff there.
That goes in there, yeah.
Really, so, really fascinating.
Yeah. And one of the things, too, to point out here is they said that race and other unannounced actions can affect your starting stats.
Interesting.
So, you know, perhaps you, you know, it, and again, they've also said that the stats differences between races aren't going to be as big, or they may, you know, be non-existent. We don't know for sure how they're going to be.
But other things.
If you're a Hyre, okay, and then you can choose, do you want to be a Midlander or a Highlander? You know, and then, you know, after that, you pick a city state that, you know, you're kind of from or you reside at or something like that. And, you know, you put those together and it says, okay, you have this, you know, this much like strength or attack or something like that, or this much HP. Like that's a whole new element of like creating your character that we haven't seen
before.
And I think that's really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I know I'm going to be playing around with just making a character for like hours probably.
They're like, oh, the Lalafell in Olda has one less HP. That ain't gonna work. I can't do that.
Yeah, that's unacceptable.
Well, you know, and you got to think that delivering a new product and you know, trying to capture a new audience, they've got to do some groundbreaking stuff here. And you know, when Square Enix really puts all of their effort into this, and I mean, you know, 5 years in development and learning what they did from Final Fantasy XI, I have no doubt that they're going to push the boundaries of MMOs in some form or fashion. And, you know, the character customization aspect is very attractive, especially from, you know, someone who's had to play, you know, cookie cutter races and, you know, with games that don't have the level of customization that you know, something like even Oblivion or Mass Effect does. You know, that needs to start translating over into the online world. And I think that's something that Square Enix recognizes, and that's good. It's gonna play in their favor for sure.
And you know, one thing that we actually forgot to mention, and I believe this was mentioned during one of the interviews at E3. You know, we're talking about how 14 is, you know, it's going to be different than any other MMOs. One of the things that they said, which is a huge change from RPGs, like in the history of RPGs, is there's going to be no experience points in Final Fantasy 14.
Oh yeah.
There's no XP, like there's no levels. It's all skill based, which is really kind of interesting. I'll be very curious to see how that works. We'll get into that a little bit after we cover some other stuff here. But let's get back to races.
Races, yes.
We have the Rogadin or the Rugadin. That's what Corinth was telling me. She's like, you need to know how to pronounce these. I'm like, no one knows how to pronounce them yet. But the Rogadin are the Galka, the tailless Galka people of Orzea. They are a maritime people who are largely found in the northern seas where they first came into Orzea. They have a cultural emphasis on competition and courage. Rogadin around Limsa Lominsa are typically seamen at port. However, many have permanently settled, becoming mercenaries, bodyguards, and even pirates. One of the interesting things that I was, you know, from what I could gather, it sounds like the Rogadin were kind of, you know, forced out of wherever they were. They were, you know, they talk about, you know, a group of pirates or whatever that, you know, lost some kind of fight, and they were, you know, that's how Limsa Lominsa was made. You know, they crashed on these rocks or whatever. So it's like, you know, we're seeing a lot of similarities here. I mean, you know, obviously we have the same kind of races, you know, or the same style at least at its core from 14 to 11 here. But now it's like the Galka people are still getting kicked out of their home.
Like, yeah.
Come on. Like, man, you don't. It's horrible.
There are definitely some conventions that they took from 11.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, I could just see, like, you know, a Galka talking to a Rogadin. So it'll be like, so how'd you get here? Yeah, ants kicked us out of the desert. Really? Yeah. It's like, how'd you get here? Sea ants? Like, I don't know. You know, who knows? Like, Sahagin kicked us out. It's like, man.
Oh, that's funny.
Catch a break.
All right. The last race that we have here are the Mikote. These are the Mithra. They are hunting tribes that followed Fauna over to Orzea during the Age of Endless Frost. There's two physically distinguishable groups, the Diurnal Seekers of the Sun and the Nocturnal Keepers of the Moon. Few in number, they tend to avoid contact with other races, choosing to lead an isolated lifestyle even when in more populated cities. So again, you know, we have Keepers of the Moon, yep. Seekers of the Sun, we have... you know,
there's two tribes right there.
Dusk White. I mean, yeah, it's really interesting how they're. I'll be curious to see what kind of parts that, you know, that the clan or, you know, group has on the character.
Well, and if you can even pick, like,
yeah,
you know, do I want to be a nocturnal cat or
right?
And if you're one over the other, do you get bonuses during the nighttime or something? But I don't know. Like, that seems like something they wouldn't want to do because they want to try and keep everything balanced, unless, you know, there's some kind of bonus that a higher would get, you know, depending on the terrain they're on or something. I don't know.
But then again, it could be a voluntary thing, much like how our, you know, you pick an allegiance to a city when you create a character in Final Fantasy XI, but you can change allegiances at any time in the game. You could, right. I mean, it's possible. And with, you know, Square Enix being the company that they are, and knowing, you know, knowing what we do about Square Enix, it's pretty safe to say that they like to encourage every style of gameplay. You know, with Final Fantasy XI, one character could be any job at any time, and all they needed to do was walk into the Mog House and switch jobs, and they were mm-hmm. automatically the next job. You know,
which
you had to unlock.
Without a doubt, one of the best parts.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it.
So imagine this. Imagine that it's possible that your allegiance to a certain clan could possibly dictate different bonuses you get, and therefore kind of pseudo dictate what kind of class you become, whether it's a tank or a DD or, you know, a heavy DD, a mage or whatever, whatever kind of bonuses. And
now that you say that, that kind of makes me think, like Fusion had said earlier, they don't want you to pick a race solely because, you know, I'm going to pick the Lalafell because
exactly.
I want to be a mage. Well, maybe each one, depending on which allegiance you're with in your race, is more suited towards mage classes versus.
And there, that's exactly how you distinguish your job classes in 14. I mean, you know, I have no physical evidence to base this off of, but, you know,
right.
kind of just extrapolating what we already know about Square Enix and their game design, it's entirely foreseeable to think that that could be a gameplay aspect, or that at least your allegiance to whatever clan is going to have an impact on your stats. And
yeah.
that it probably won't be permanent.
Yeah. I mean, just the idea that they're, you know, after you create your character, and I mean with a lot more customization than an 11, you know, you have your character and then you can choose, you know, we're assuming you can choose your, you know, the city, state, or wherever you reside just from looking at 11. But, you know, and then maybe the idea of being able to choose a group to affiliate yourself with on top of that, I mean, that's just,
yeah,
you know, kind of throwing all this together, it'll be really kind of cool, I think, to see how it works and how, you know, how, if anything, it affects your stats when you start out.
Absolutely.
It's going to be interesting. They want races to be the same.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's fine. But after that, they can say, okay, if, you know, you're with this group or whatever, you can get these bonuses or whatever, you know, the base races, they're all even, but then, you know, affiliations and stuff will alter, which could be kind of cool.
Absolutely. It's going to be, I mean, you know, no matter what, it's going to be interesting and inventive and unlike anything we've ever seen. And,
right.
you know, I'm so excited. And just even thinking about the possibilities, it just has me so stoked for 14.
Yeah. And one thing too, one more thing before we move on to city states next for the races. It was asked if there's going to be any male Makote or female Rogadin. It's a secret. However, we have seen what appear to be male Makotes in the early concept art that we've seen for the game. If you go onto the website, there's that really long kind of art where it looks like the people are in like a pub or something like that.
A female
yeah.
Rodigan, though, is just going to be awkward.
That's what I've been saying. I'm like, that's kind of weird.
It's just awkward, man.
It'll happen. Yeah, after 11. I mean, if they said it's a secret, there's got to be something behind it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Right. Either one or the other, at least, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, or
even a whole nother race, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Yeah. I would like to see additional races other than the ones that we've, you know, seen in Vanadil. I think that would, you know, kind of expand the scope of the world to another degree. And that's, I mean, it would make sense, like, you know, because you have the Final Fantasy brand to build off of, that, you know, since some of the races are based on, you know, races that exist in Final Fantasy XI, it, you know, to release those first is totally understandable and foreseeable, mm-hmm. but I would love to see them expand on the races. That would be so
cool. And, you know, one of the, you know, we could, you know, you look at 11, and it's like, okay, you have, you know, the Humes and Bastok, the Taru and the Mithra and Windurst, mm-hmm. or you have the Galka and Bastok as well, and then, and you know, Elven and Sandoria. But so far with 14, like, we get hints that, okay, there's, you know, some of this race in this area, some in this area. They don't really give a definitive, like, home.
Right, yeah.
And that kind of throws off the whole, like, okay, well, are they going to introduce new races?
Yeah.
Because it was hinted at that there, you know, at least, you know, in the storyline, at one point, there were six city-states in Orzea. You know, one of those gets destroyed, leaving three left. So that means there's, you know, there's two other ones that we haven't heard about yet, which could, you know, maybe have other races. We don't know. You know, we don't know if, you know, if they'll be mentioned or not when the game is out. You know, that might be something they'll save for an expansion or something.
Right.
But lots of stuff to look forward for sure.
Yeah, you gotta think if an expansion is gonna contain new regions, it's probably gonna contain new classes as well. Mm-hmm. So it's totally foreseeable and reasonable to think that it would also contain new races.
Right.
You know, and it may be a total surprise when we get into Orzea and for the first time, and, you know, we walk up to a shopkeeper and it's a totally different race that we'd never seen before. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be two expansions before we're going to be able to play
it. It'll be a Keekern asking for some clink clink.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. There you go. I'd love to be able to play as a Keekern.
Expansion will be like Ottergon Returns.
Yeah, right.
Clink clink.
That's real quick here before we move on to city states. Let's talk about Orzea. You know, we knew about the region from the trailer when the game was announced at E3. We do have a little more information though now. Orzea is a geographical region comprised of the continent of Aldenard and surrounding islands. So it's not Orzea itself isn't actually a continent. It's an area. So it's a, you know, continent and some surrounding islands, and it seems pretty large. There's five seas in Orzea, so that makes me that's a lot of seas.
Yeah, yeah. They did seem to stress in the trailer, the presence of ships and you know maritime travel as well as you know airships.
Right.
And very interesting designed airships.
Yeah. And Orzea and the continent of Aldenard are part of the larger world known as Hydaelyn. This was something that it was in the trailer, but translations and stuff, no one was really sure
right, yeah.
what it was going to be. So Hydaelyn is the name of this world in 14, just as Vanadil was for 11. It's been told that story is going to play a very important role. You know, there's a bit of a translation issue. Me and Corinth were talking about it, but it seems like when you start, things will be a little more tense this time around instead of, oh, you're in Winders, you know,
here's
talk to those NPCs, or, you know, you have 50 gil to buy, like, nothing. Go buy yourself a crystal or something. But, you know, it sounds like it might be a little more, you know, heated when you start off this time.
That would be interesting as, you know, there are a lot of other MMOs that, you know, put you into an action-packed situation mm-hmm. from the outset. And that's how you, you know, get acclimated to the battle system and
right.
into combat and stuff like that.
So, and, you know, we've seen, you know, Square Enix with 11, they've, you know, a year or so ago, maybe two, they actually added those quests for new players.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like a tutorial for that game. They may do something, you know, starting out with 14 now that they've, you know, like, hey, maybe we should put this in here. This might be useful for people that don't have any idea how to play the game.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be something really cool.
And
Which will be all of us. Right, yeah. You know, weather, climate changes, we've talked about that. Day and night. It hasn't been confirmed, but it's, you know, looking like it, you know, one day will be about an hour, kind of like it is with Vanadil and 11.
Gotcha.
Currency will most likely be gil, because it's kind of hard to wait.
So.
It's hard to get away from gil. It's a Final Fantasy
game. It is. It's a staple.
Gil, you know. There's going to be a variety of transportation methods available. We've seen airships in the trailer as well as a boat. We've seen chocobos.
Little airships, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, big airships, little airships. We don't, you know, we've seen chocobos. We don't know if those will be used for transportation or not. And another thing that was mentioned, too, that we kind of talked about briefly was the mention that future expansions could go outside of Orzea. So
I would imagine they probably would.
Yeah, just like we had Ottergon.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Very cool stuff. And that will bring us into the city-states. It sounds like right now there's going to be three main city-states. There's mention of a fourth.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, this is very similar to something that I've seen before. And it's kind of weird how, you know, they talk about the history of these. It says, you know, they talk about how in the past the city-states were at war with each other.
Shocking.
Kind of sounds like the three nations on a deal. How, you know, for the Crystal War, they were all kind of like, you know, Tarus were getting, you know, beating up everybody, Elvins and Humes. It's just, you know, it seems like the same kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They have three city-states on the website. However, only one really has any information on it. And that is Limsa Lominsa, which I think looks really cool. Mm-hmm. And one thing to point out, too, and this is something that I had noticed once they, you know, released the concept art for it. Do you guys remember the tech demo for Rapture?
Yeah, vaguely, yes. Yeah.
It looked like it was kind of on the water, a series of, you know... I'm wondering if that was Limsa.
Oh, I think I know what you mean. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time. I'm wondering if that was some early work for Limsa Lominsa, because if you look in the concept art, there's some like big trees kind of in the distance. Same in the trailer. There was like a dragon flying around. We saw dragons in the trailer. You know, it's just these group of like these tall kind of towers connected with bridges. It seems, you know, like it may have been an early version of it, which is something to look at. We don't know for sure, but there are a few similarities. So
yeah,
Limsa Lominsa is located on the southern coast of the island of Valbrand in the Rotano Sea. It's said to be blessed by the goddess of navigation Limlane.
Mm-hmm.
It's spread out over several tiny islands and connected together by ivory bridges. It is said that Limlane took pity on a defeated armada, which, you know, we think may be the Rogadin. That fled its homeland. The armada was guided to a shallow bay where ships became grounded on sharp rocks. The remnants of their vessels were used to begin construction of the city. The thalassocracy of Limsa Lominsa employs a powerful navy, and they have the Knights of the Barracuda that patrol the Orzean seas to protect those who do business with the nation. It's rumored that the knights and local pirates...
I'll be a Knight of the Barracuda.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
It's rumored that the knights and local pirates in waters close to the city are working together to profit off of unwary traders.
Interesting. Pirates?
That sounds like quite a big story element to me. We have, you know, Knights of the Barracuda, pirates right there, you know, possible, you know, maybe affiliations or clans or something.
Yeah.
So that could be really cool. Not much on the other city-states. We do have a little bit. We have Olda, which is a desert city rich in mineral wealth, which kind of almost sounds like Bastok.
A little bit, yeah.
It is said that clans of Rogadin, known as the Hellsguard, have mastered the magical arts and live deep in the mountains of Olda. So, right, you know, and even then, it's like, it kind of sounds like Bastok. Oh, it has some Galka guys. That's interesting.
And they know magic.
And they know magic, yeah.
That's weird.
It's like two similarities, and it's like, wait, what? So that's kind of interesting. And, you know, now if you look at it, you know, if the Knights of the Barracuda are, you know, maybe made up of Rogadin, you have, you know, Knights of the Barracuda, and then you have Hellsguard.
Interesting.
So that's, again,
yeah,
another, you know, two different, you know, groups.
Mm-hmm.
We have Gridania. We really don't know anything about it other than it's, you know, kind of a foresty kind of city, much like Windurst.
Windurst, yeah. It looks kind of like Windurst, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they, you know, they talk about the Makote and the Lalafell, it seems like they may... you know, resided in Gridania, but, you know, we don't know for sure yet. And last but not least, the last city-state mentioned is Alamigo, which is located in the north of Orzea. It was destroyed by the Garlean Empire 15 years ago. It was considered to be the most powerful out of the six Orzean city-states. It's like Tabnazia all over again, man.
And in the 8 years that this game is going to be around, you're never going to be able to set foot in it.
As soon as I'm reading this, I'm like, you're never going to, like, you'll see it on a cliff or something. And that'll be it. Like, oh, man, they're doing it to me again.
Oh, you got me.
But, yeah, it's like, man, after the fall of Alamigo, the nation's kind of put aside their differences and they formed an alliance. So, you know, it's kind of like the, again, it's, you know, a lot of similarities with the Crystal War, where, you know, when that started happening, all the, and all the nations were kind of like, all right, we should probably kind of buddy up and do something about these guys in the North. And, you know, we're not big fans of them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then, you know, they blow up one city and then it's over. Like, come on. Like, really? Like, well, the Empire, they take out Alamigo, and then they just kind of disappear after that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's really interesting, and that's, I mean, that's got to be a huge central plot point there, because, you know, anything called, you know, the something Empire is, you know, has got to be a probably a less than savory organization for the safety and well-being of adventuring fellows such as ourselves. And you know, I really like this idea of kind of like, you know, moral kind of like lines being blurred, where, you know, it's very interesting. It's very compelling. You know, just the little bit of information that they've given us, it's very, very compelling. And I'm really interested to find out more about the world. And yeah. And it sounds like they've really fleshed out the world in a way that they didn't really flesh out Vanadil. And they've spent a lot of time, you know, thinking about canon and continuity and, you know, forward thinking, like, where are they going to be going with right. this game in the future? So, and you know, there are, of course, there's indication with that of Final Fantasy XI. But, you know, again, learning what they did, they're going to be doing it bigger, badder, more badass. It's just, I mean, you know, all around, it's going to be better.
I mean, you know, looking back at 11, Xylard aside, because that was supposed to be like original game launch stuff that they just couldn't get out in time.
Right.
You know, you have, you know, Chains of Promathia came out, and that was, it just fit really well with the storyline. You know, it feels like they were kind of planning on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
it'll be
curious to see, you know, what they're, you know, what they have in store for 14, if they already have kind of, you know, ideas for expansions, because they've already said that, you know, not confirming it, but they've said that, you know, it's possible that maybe, you know, we'll do an expansion and it'll go outside of Orzea. And one of the things that we know about the Garlean Empire is they're from somewhere in the east. And again, you know, with 11, we had Ottergon, and you get a new continent to the east. Like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
They should have mixed it up. Go west or something.
Well, and again...
Go northwest.
and again, you know, you have this big empire that's located to the east, and unlike with Final Fantasy XI, and unlike in Vanadil, where, you know, they kept to themselves and in fact were very isolationist. Excuse me. This empire is much more in your face and yeah. wanting to control, assert its authority a little bit more.
It's
and that's cool.
Kind of mysterious,
that.
Too.
It is.
I mean, they show up one day, they pwn Alamigo, and they're like, all right, see ya. You know, like,
yeah.
it really almost makes me wonder if there's some kind of like greater being or greater mind behind it. That's like, we need to go and, like, you know, kick them into shape or something. Like, I wonder if, you know, that sounds like something that could be some kind of like, you know, hidden plot element that we may hear about. You know, we do know that the Garlean Empire is from the east. They have metal clad warriors with weapons that like shoot fire. It almost sounds like flamethrowers or something, which is kind of weird. Behemoth airship fleets, that's pretty big. I mean, you know, if we looked at races, it talks about how the Hire are very, you know, tech savvy. Maybe the Garlean Empire is made up of Hire, or, you know, maybe the two are connected somehow. That could be really interesting, you know. And going back down to the topic here, when the Garlean Empire left after they destroyed Alamigo and left, you know, the nations buddied up, and they said that after that, the Orzea was in a age of calm, which is kind of where the story picks up now, like when you start 14.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So it's, you know, again, you have this kind of war history. Something happens, everyone's kind of like, okay, we're all right now, we're good.
And yeah, probably not for long.
Right, yeah.
Just kidding.
You thought you were okay.
That'll be the intro. Like, it'll talk about all the war. It's like, oh, Age of Calm, and you'll start your character, and you'll, like, you'll be in your city state. You look up. It's like, oh crap, is that a Garlean Empire ship? Like, oh,
exactly. Yeah,
man.
I mean, you know, even from the trailer, there's a lot of exploding and
there was a lot of airship combat kind of stuff.
Yeah,
which is really interesting. So
I hope that's a gameplay element too.
The more we talk about it, the more I'm like, oh please, just let me play.
Yeah. I know, it's killing me.
I just want to fly an airship and shoot dragons. That's all I want to do.
That's it.
Yeah.
Whole games like that, I'm good.
And this is kind of where the game starts off after, in this Age of Calm. After Alamigo was destroyed, city guard units were kind of restructured into, standing armies so they could kind of hold their own a little more. And so higher swords or, like mercenaries, they didn't have anything to do. A lot of them kind of turned into, kind of bad guys, robbing and stealing and that kind of thing.
Acts of villainy. Again, we come to a moral distinction between, is your character good or bad? Mm-hmm. That's got to be telling us something,
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I know it's speculation and I might be way wrong and I apologize if I am, but... That's a pretty active statement.
Don't apologize,
that says,
man. That's half the fun of waiting for a game to come out. It's like
I feel like I might
get out and like, wow, yeah, I didn't even think of that.
That's true. That's true.
They're gonna go old school RPG, and you make your character. It's like, are you chaotic, good, neutral?
There
like,
you go. There you go. Old school D&D.
So they, after that happened, they created guilds so that all the mercenaries out there, they could kind of get back into, doing something and have a chance at redemption by aiding others through these guilds. And this is, I think, kind of where, the meat and bones of 14 kind of starts to happen with the guild leaf system, which is, it sounds like, with 14, we've had, you go out, you party, you get XP. Then we had Honor Gone came out and we had Assaults.
Yeah.
Promathia had Limbus. Xylart had Dynamis, and then we get Fields of Valor, we have Moblin Mazemongers, and this, Guild Leaves, it kind of sounds like the culmination of all of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
A guild leaf is actually like an item. It's a plate of metal made with stained crystal set in a frame of metal. And it looks like stained glass. They're really kind of cool looking. And they, they show off a virtuous deed of one of the patriot saints of Orzea. And so what we do know at this time is that you get a guild leaf when you take on a quest or a task. It'll give you entry into, areas that may normally be restricted. They mention hunting or harvesting on private lands, confiscation of goods, negotiations with enemies of city states, which, again, there's that kind of good and bad kind of thing right there, like we've mentioned before. But it almost sounds really similar to like Assault or Moblin Mazemongers, where you get your entry item, you go off, you get, put into, like this area or an instance or something, and you do your stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the entry point of this, they talk about, it will also, if you have a guild leave, will grant use of Aetherite portals, which are, it's almost like the runic portals in Honor Gone. It sounds like you get access to it and it'll, let you go and do your quest.
Yeah.
Kind of the interesting thing about this is they said that they want the Aetherite in 14 to be kind of the, where everybody kind of groups together, in 11, everybody and their brother is in Honor Gone. How it was before Honor Gone. It was Juno. But this way, doing all these quests, they want people just to be hanging around the Aetherite, say, hey, I'm going to do this. Who wants to come with me? So that could turn out to be kind of interesting. And I'll be curious to see how many, shouts we start seeing around the Aetherite, like harvesting. Do you need it?
Or even if there would be like something like an Aetherite chat channel where you could put, mm-hmm. if you wanted to join it, you could, if you wanted to, hear the shouts of other people, the quote unquote shouts.
Yeah.
It would be like a big public link shell that you could mm-hmm. equip when you wanted to hear, so you don't have to be tethered to someplace like a city zone and mm-hmm. waiting for a shout for, something like an assault, in this case, a guild leave or something. And you could be anywhere doing anything and still be able to communicate on that kind of level.
I think, you know, one of the kind of questions I would have is, we know that there's probably going to be more multiple Aetherite portals, but, you know, was it going to be like per city state, per different type of guild leave, per like area you can do that in? You know, we don't know yet.
Yeah.
So it could be, you know, there could be a bunch of them, or it could be like staging points with assault. You know, there'll be like six or seven of them just kind of scattered around or something. But that, you know, I'm looking forward to that. One of the couple of things that the magazines revealed about guild leave is that certain leaves will become available if you have higher skills,
which is pretty cool, because that hints towards how you know, quote unquote, level up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you progress your character, you know, you'll have like if you can, you know, if there's some type of skill associated with something like, you know, fishing or, you know, blacksmithing or something, the higher that is, you know, if you hit a certain cap or level on that, you'll be able to do the next level up for, you know, for this particular guild leaf, which is, you know, it kind of reminds you of like assault rank ups. You know, you get to the point where you're at, you know, this skill level or this kind of experience level. A couple more things we do know about guild leaves. You know, we don't need a minimum number of people. It'll be easy to go, you know, log in, solo a quest or whatever, log out. Really, really good to be able to do that.
A good incentive to do quests, too. Because there's very little incentive in 11 to do quests unless it's something very specific, like, you know, the Tenshoto invite quest or, you know, stuff like that. It has to be either beneficial in the long run for the character as a whole to get, like, access somewhere, or it's really not worth doing because the rewards were pretty crazy for a while.
That's, you know, hopefully the rewards will be, you know, at least worth it. I mean, they, you know, with 11, they had the new update where there was a thing you could do for Moblin Mazemongers where you have a little goblin NPC or something. And with cave conservation points, now you can get a second chest and get kind of a second crack at an item. Yeah. My cave conservation chest, the last time I did that, I got a belt with, like, -2 defense. Like, what?
Why would you ever...
That's effective.
Like, what?
That was worth your time.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, the one I got in the regular chest was better than the one that was supposed to be, you know, like, I don't know.
Equip it with some Dark Knight JSE and just get hit a bunch.
There we go. That's what it's for.
Suicide
just
gear.
Forgets.
It's for making Dark Knight LOL YouTube videos or something. Like,
watch me at 75 get one. Exactly. Watch me at 75 get one-shotted by a clipper in the
I wonder
dunes.
If, like, anyone's ever done that. See how fast, like, their Dark Knight can die. It's like, have contests and race.
Great. Now I gotta
you don't
go find
need
out.
To, yeah. Die in about a second anyway.
Watch me die to bubbly Bernie.
Yeah. We know that the leaves a guild has available can change. I think the timing is undecided. I think they were talking about bi-weekly. If you look at the high-res images of the there's three different leaves that have been released, or the images of them. If you look at the bottom of them, you can see that Limsa Lominsa is there. So they could be maybe city-state specific, which is kind of interesting.
Kind of like campaign ops in a way. Like splitting heirs and stuff like that, where you have unique BCs to burning circles to that specific city zone. Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. It sounds you know, very much like, you know, like you said, a system that has been developed out of testing from a lot of different systems from 11. It seems like they've got a pretty good idea of where they want this to go and how they want it to function.
Yeah, and one of the really cool things that I'm glad to see, you can hold multiple guild leaves at one time.
Fantastic.
So you don't have to go out, you grab a guild leave, you know, go out to an Aetherite, pour it over to wherever the quest is, do the quest, and come back. You can take a bunch with you. They haven't, you know, said how many yet, or if there even is a limit. I would imagine that if, you know, they want to keep it, you know, casual play, where you can just kind of jump in and do it, that ideally there wouldn't be a limit on a number of guild leaves that you could get, but right. We don't know for sure. Only one person needs a guild leave. Other members can still join. It's kind of like I think Campaign Ops had that with some of the instance kind of things where you only need the leader to have like the entry, and other people can still go in and benefit in some way.
Which they is good, that, yeah.
They do that in 14. They tweak that a little bit, though. Skills will build faster when you're doing guild leave quests.
Excellent.
As opposed to just kind of being out on the field, which is really good. Only those that have the leave when doing a quest, though, get the rewards. So you could, you know, if you don't have a guild leave, you could still go with other people, you know, maybe skill up a little bit, you know, more than you usually would on the field.
Right.
But if you don't have the leave, you won't get, like, the end reward, whether it be, you know, guild or items or anything like that. But there is still, you know, I don't know how, you know, much of an impact the skill benefit you'll get from doing these things in guild leave will be, but you'll still get some kind of benefit from doing it, which I think is really good. I, you know, you remember back to 11, there was that update where they made it so that you could get XP for doing like COP quests because all these people are shouting for it, wanting to do missions, and everyone's already done it or they don't want to do it.
And, you there's know, no incentive.
Gave,
yeah.
Right. It gave them a little incentive. You know, go kill some pots and see, you know, get like 2,000 XP or something.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So, and I think we already mentioned about Aetherites being gathering points as opposed to cities. So that'll be kind of cool. I'm really kind of excited to see how well this works. I mean, with, you know, when they were implemented into 14 Fields of Valor and all this stuff, it was really a great addition. And to, you know, see this as, you know, it almost appears to be like the core of 14, just this kind of jump in, do a quest, and that's, you know, you can log out. Like, that's, they're really pushing this casual play thing, and I think it can turn out to be really good for them.
Absolutely, yeah.
As long as they've got gameplay for no matter what kind of, you know.
Well, and that's, you know, and that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, if depending on if there's any kind of limit on guild leaves, I mean, you know, you could, essentially, you could just pick a day, say, okay, you know, let's go, you know, get this stuff skilled up. We'll do these quests while we're doing it. You know, if we can, you know, hopefully, you know, if we could reach a certain point, we can go another, like a quest up and do the higher difficulty or the more advanced one or something.
And I think it remains to be said that this is definitely not the only system that we're going to see out of this game.
No.
You know, this is definitely going to be a big foundation. But at some point, there's going to be, you know, something like salvage or, you know, something like Dynamis. That's, a lot more extended and designed for a more serious player. I mean, you know, you looking at the development for 11, if there's one thing that Square Enix does really, really well, and I mean really, really well, it's their endgame content. Hands down. You know, the experience from 1 to 75 was pretty much a grind, and then when you get to 75, there's all of these things that you can do.
Yeah, you get to the end, and it's like this whole new thing.
It's
exactly.
Like in 11, you don't enjoy... Well, you enjoy the game, obviously, leveling up. You learn a lot of stuff. You do the missions and stuff like that. But
yeah.
I think to the majority of people that play 11, the end game is where it's at. It's almost like two parts to the game. You've got your beginning part where you're leveling up and you're learning stuff and all that. But then as soon as you hit end game, it's like a totally different game.
Yeah.
Which is good in a sense. But it shouldn't mean that you're literally, hey, I've got to grind my job to 75 before I can do a lot of fun stuff.
Right, exactly.
There should still be fun stuff on the way.
And that's one of the big things, too, with the way that they have the system set up. It's just, you just skill up certain, you know, abilities or attributes or something. It's not where you have to be, you know, this level. You don't get experience and level up. You develop skills.
Well, I'm sure there's still going to be a huge, like if you skill up, say, you know, a job, a class, I'm sure there's going to be a huge difference in the amount of HP you have, defense, attack. It's not like whatever, you know, I equip my, you know, this staff, you know, so I'm a black mage. I'm sure it's not, okay, I can keep up with all the skilled up people.
Right.
Like, there's got to be, it's an MMO, there's going to be some sort of grind.
Advancement. Right, exactly. And it seems like they've taken a lot of the lessons that they've learned from developing their endgame content and taking that and transitioning it and making it content that, Chin, as you said, makes the progression through the levels a much more interesting and engaging experience. I'm sure I'm sure, just as you said, there's probably going to be parties, there's probably going to be hunting and XP and all of that. That's probably not XP, but you know, some kind of something that resembling
grind. There's going to be something at least similar.
At least similar to parties in some respect. But here, you know, here's this other thing that you can do, this other, you know, part of the progression system. And then, you know, what's encouraging is content that's like salvage, you know, this big puzzle that, you know, contains some very difficult monsters and some, you know, very considerable tasks and a very big learning curve. They're going to apply that sort of content towards the end game, sort of the spectrum. And that's, I think that is very, very encouraging and makes, again, for a much more engaging experience throughout the whole game.
Right. Well, I think that's one thing with 11 is, granted, in any game, once you've done all the content, whether you've completed it or at least given it a shot, like, stuff gets old. But if you're having all these new experiences as you level up and you keep, you know what I mean, or skill up, rather.
Yeah.
Like, if you're staying engaged with new stuff as you level, it's only going to give you more incentive to stick with the game and keep leveling stuff. Or not leveling, I'm confusing myself. It's just going to keep you interested in what's next, what's going on here.
Well, I think one of the things, too, that'll kind of, you know, keep it fresh with 11 is just kind of like, okay, I'm going to party here, then I'm going to party here, maybe do Fields of Valor here. Like, it's, you know, nothing really changes up, you know, that much. But with Guild Leave, if you can, it's more like, you know, Moblin Mazemongers, only it seemed, you know, a little more accessible. It's not like, okay, once a day.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, you can customize it and you can choose what you want. So you can make it different every time. So it's not going to be the same old stuff. And as you progress, you get access, you know, you get access to higher, you know, tiered like guild leaves or something like that. That'll be, you know, different, have different elements or difficulty. I mean, it's just, it already seems like worlds better than, you know, than just having the grind to 75.
Absolutely.
That's in 11.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
All right, so next up we have the armory system, and I think this is probably what a lot of people are curious to see now.
Yeah.
I gotta say I'm kind of cautious on it right now. One of the things that, you know, they've come out
it
and said.
It kind of makes you a little nervous, right? Well, you're kind of like,
yeah. Right off the bat, they come out and they say they're trying to avoid classes from past Final Fantasy games like Black Mage, so that players don't feel limited to, you know, how they should play and, you know, what spells or abilities they should use. It's like, it's a Final Fantasy game. How can you not have, like, Black Mage or
right.
White Mage?
Well,
or,
you can have roles that are assignable in a group setting that aren't clearly defined. For example, and I think that they really kind of extrapolated on this with Final Fantasy XII, where you have the licensing system, and you have this entire board, and again, you know, sphere grid too. Think about that, where you have this entire big board that has all it's all uniform. It all has the same stuff on it, right? You know, it's you know, weapons are up here, and job skills are down here, and you know, and you can develop a character. And it's nice to think that, you know, you might have in Final Fantasy XII the entire thing unlocked eventually. But, you know, at some point at the game, you're developing a character to fit a certain role.
Mm-hmm.
And if they put the same kind of design concept on Final Fantasy XIV as they did, you know, the same kind of idea behind the sphere grid system or the licensing system, that could dictate roles while being able to have, you know, multiple different kind of melee classes multiple mm-hmm. different kinds of mage classes, because they're, you know, you're going to have some kind of healer. You're going to have some kind of offensive mage. You're going to have some kind of defensive melee and offensive melee. It can't just be uniform between fighters and mage.
Yeah.
You know?
And in the case of 14,
well, that's one of the things that worry me, too, is if, say you only get, say as an example, it's very similar to the license system. If that's only per character, then I don't like it. Because unless you can undo the whole board, which I also kind of don't like, because then you have a bunch of people who are exactly the same.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It kind of has to be per class for it to work, in my opinion. Like, if you have, like, your mage staff, you know, you level it through those, like, a sphere grid or licensing system to kind of excel at a certain part of that job.
Sure,
So as an example, if you used 11's red mage, okay, I'm going to use, I only get so many points as I skill this up to cap. So I can either go a route that's more spell casting or more of an offensive DD kind of mage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that way you don't have that, okay, this person's a red mage, they better be in the back lines doing this for me. You could say, well, I leveled red mage and this is how it is. And it, as long as it works both ways, if you go, you know what I mean, a certain route,
mm-hmm.
then that's great. But if I'm worried that it's either going to be everyone's going to have the exact same character, or there's going to be a set requirement for what, you know, if you leveled the red mage, that you're, you know, one part doesn't work. It all needs to work no matter how you do it.
Right. And here's, again, you know, we come back to, you know, the concept that we were talking about earlier that could possibly be behind your affiliation or allegiance to a certain group. You know, take, for example, if you wanted to be a fighter and you were, you were also aligned to the Duskwhite Elizin. Okay. That might be a much more offensive sort of, you know, because you're aligned with Duskwhite Elizin. That's a much more offensive stance, as opposed to if you were, you know, aligned with a different part of the Elizin or a different group that may, you know, encourage more defensive tendencies. Mm-hmm. So there's that part of it to play around with, too. And then there's also the personal customization part of it, because the way that it's got to work, it's got to be balanced. So as you progress through a system, and let's say for the case, you know, the sake of argument, that you get something like a license, you know, like a license system from 12, where if you pick something, there has to be a consequence for picking that, right? So if you unlock something on the board, it locks another part of the board, right?
Or so, at least while you're a certain
exactly
class.
Exactly, and I understand, Chin, what you're saying, that may end up locking you into one type of class for the entire time you have a character. But I mean, let's say for the sake of argument, you could have multiple licenses, you know, based on you know, multiple license boards, like we have multiple macro boards.
Right. That's what I was saying. Like,
yeah.
As long as it's customizable and individual to each.
Absolutely.
Class.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, because if it's just for your character, regardless of class, then you just have a bunch of characters exactly the same,
mm-hmm.
to an extent anyway, running around. And that's yeah. kind of lame.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of funny, like, looking back at this now, like, initially I'm like, no, Black Mage, like, man. But really, like, looking back at the past couple of Final Fantasies, like, 9 kind of had, you know, this character is this job, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
But like, you know, 7, 8, 10.
Yeah, they all got
junctioning.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Grids. There weren't any job classes.
Exactly. And I have to believe that, you know, if you look at the development of Final Fantasy games, that's the direction that they've wanted to take with the Final Fantasy series for a long time. And in a sense, the return to a job class system with Final Fantasy XI was a very safe decision for them, because you can create uniform and very, you know, a very balanced system like that. So I think they're challenging themselves in the way that they're developing this game and allowing for something that is much more like, you know, the Sphere Grid system or the Materia system or something like that. That's what the, you know, that's what they want to develop into, you know, convert into an online structure.
Yeah, well, I think...
And that's really gutsy. And it's going to take, I mean, it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of balancing.
I think one of the good comparisons to make, I mean, it's been a while since I've played Final Fantasy IX, but you actually acquired abilities through skilling up.
Exactly.
Like certain, like, weapons and stuff. And that, you know, we can jump into the armory system here. That sounds exactly like what we may be looking at with 14.
Oh, it's, I mean, it's, you got to think, like, I mean, you know, even look between the difference between Final Fantasy 1 and 2. Final Fantasy 1 had job classes. Final Fantasy 2 was skill based. So it seems like, you know, the safe way to play it is to go job classes first so you can make sure you make a good, you know, balanced product that, you know, is clearly defined and has clearly defined roles, but then take that and try to, you know, differentiate it or make it unique. And they, I mean, they immediately did that with Final Fantasy II.
Mm-hmm.
That was what everyone's first thought was when they saw that character progression was going to be based upon weapon classes. And, you know, everyone automatically went to FF2.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a long-standing convention, and, you know, I have every reason to believe that it'll be, you know, that same sort of thinking will transfer over to Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, something else that was talked about on the North American, the official North American website, was the armory system. And this is really the first look that we've gotten in at the actual battle and job class system, if you can even call it a job class, but character class system.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that they mentioned right off the bat that was kind of theorized by some of the hints that they had given through, you know, through the E3 press conference and through kind of subsequent interviews, but that your active skills change by equipping different weapons. And so, again, like we were saying, much like Final Fantasy II, this seems to be a throwback to that, or even again, you know, to something like Final Fantasy IX, kind of a similar concept here, and that's definitely cool. And what else is really neat, and they made note of this, that when you change your weapon, it changes your character's outward appearance, which begs the question: how is armor addressed?
It sounds like it's going to be kind of how it is now in you know, 11. You have, you know, different parts of armor that you can equip. It sounds like they're going to be, you know, obviously, if you, you know, equip a sword, you're going to want your melee gear to be put on. Or if you equip a staff, you know, you'll want your mage robes or something. So they're looking at ways so that, you know, they can swap that armor in and out very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, whether it'll be something kind of like, you know, making macro lines, we don't know. But that is something that they want to look into. Hopefully it's something where, you know, because with 11 right now, there's a limit to the number of lines that you can put in a single macro.
Which is,
and
it,
that
it's just,
kills.
Oh, it does.
It does. So
it's like a slap.
It would be, you know, really good if you could do something where it's like, okay, when I'm this job, I want this gear to swap in. Or, you know, if I equip this weapon, this gear needs to be on me.
I think when they mean appearance, too, they don't mean your general armor. I think they mean, like, in 11, you know, if you don't have any equipment on, you have a set look depending on your race.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what it means. Maybe, you know, if there's some sort of assassin class, you'd have, like, a default cape kind of thing or something. You know what I mean? That's just an idea.
Yeah. And one of the things that they do mention about armor is that special skills can become available depending on how you coordinate your armor with the weapon. You know, matching certain armor with, you know, or pairing it up with your weapon will affect, you know, the skill with the weapon, you know, kind of like some stuff does now in 11, where if you have, you know, this item, it'll enhance this part of your job or this ability or whatever. And, you know, that's a lot of armor to be carrying around. If,
yeah,
you know, if first you have armor for, they're calling these disciplines. If you have, you know, your gladiator armor with you, and then you switch over to a mage, but then, you know, you want to put different armor on for, you know, to acquire different skills.
Right, yeah.
That's a lot of stuff. So, you know, one of the things that was mentioned is they want to have large inventories, which I think is a really, really good idea.
Thank you.
Hopefully the PS3's memory isn't capped at 80.
PS3 limitations.
Yeah.
There you go.
PS3 can go to 90 inventory spaces. All right.
Woo!
Lucky, you know, I think that'll be very useful. You know, one of the things that I think was mentioned at VannaFest was the idea of, you know, when they were kind of looking into the inventory issue was, you know, maybe using mannequins or something where, you know, or a, you know, like a job like bag or something where, you know, when you go on this job, you grab this bag that has, you know, all your stuff for that particular class.
There you go.
I think that's something that will probably end up being, you know, kind of converted into 14 here. So that'll be kind of cool. There are four disciplines, and each of them have two
that we know of.
Yeah, that we know of. And each one of those has kind of like two like subclasses. Some of them we've kind of heard mentioned. Only four are confirmed right now. Disciplines of the hand, blacksmith, which is really kind of interesting to see the, you know, that crafts are being kind of integrated into the discipline system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with
that kind of makes me think maybe it'll be unlike 11 where you have to sink so much gil into leveling a craft.
Yeah, I mean,
now you might only have to sink some time into it.
You know, grab a quest guild leaf, you know, go into some area and like make a sword or something. And, you know, have it be different where, you know, than Moblin Mazemongers where you actually, you know, get something out of it, you know, because the crafting ones, it's like, you know, when they introduce that, it's like, yeah, you can, you know, get skill ups and stuff. Like, I've seen people get like 0.1 skill ups, like out of like, you know, 10 or 15 tries. Like, it's not worth anything.
Sure.
But, you know, and especially, you know, if it has this kind of placement in the game, I think that they'll have a much larger role. There's also disciplines of the land. Fisherman is the confirmed one here. There's also talks about some kind of like harvester or agriculturalist for, you know, mining and that kind of thing. Disciplines of war. This is where your fighting jobs are going to come into play here, because you're probably not going to fight people with a fishing pole. You know, gladiator here is the one that's been kind of confirmed. You know, there's also been some mention, you know, whether rumor or, you know, one of these classes that they've kind of mentioned but haven't really officially, you know, said we're doing this, is archer, which I, you know, that's mm-hmm. that would make sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And lastly, we have disciplines of magic, and thaumaturge is the one that they talk about.
How do you say it? Well, how do you say it?
Anyway? I'm saying thaumaturge right now.
Fair enough. That sounds close.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
When you read it, you don't like think of saying it out loud.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, I mean, you know, we got, you know, four different disciplines, and in each one of those has, you know, at least at this moment looks like two different you know, professions or whatever you want to call them. So I mean, how many classes were there when 11 started up? There was six. Wasn't there? There was
red mage, white mage, yeah. Black mage, monk, warrior,
thief,
six.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, it's looking like we may have a couple more right off the bat, and the idea that, you know, it's all skill based and you can kind of develop your own character. I mean, that's, I'm really kind of anxious to see, you know, how all this is going to play out.
Yeah, so absolutely. Exciting. So a lot of really interesting stuff about Final Fantasy XIV, especially, you know, this new info that we're actually finding out a little bit more about the meat of the game here. And you know, I can speak for myself to say that I'm really looking forward to the game and to the beta, everything about it. This is going to be a really, really fun process covering, you know, from the very, very beginnings of their release of the development cycle. I think that this is going to be a big adventure for all of us, and I'm really looking forward to exploring the world of Orzea.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been hearing about this stuff for a while, and to, you know, finally see it, you know, start to take shape and, you know, hearing things about just, you know, getting kind of, you know, get your feet wet with the lore that they're putting up on the website.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it's just, you know, it's really cool to just see it as it comes out instead of just, you know, jumping into it once it's out. You know, you can see the game kind of develop, and I think that'll be, you know, part of the experience, not just playing the game, but playing it, you know, and kind of following it.
Absolutely. Were you guys, now, before you had actually started playing 11, did you guys take note of any of the pre-release stuff? Were you guys up on that, like, when it was in its beta at all? See, I wasn't either. And so this is, I mean, I've done, it's happened for me with other games. Chin, how about you?
I knew it existed. I had read about it, you know. But there was just no way for me to play because of an internet connection. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it was interesting when it was first being released and announced, but it kind of went to the back of my head till I got DSL, and then I was like, oh, I got to go get that.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So
it's definitely knowing that, like, I got a PS3, so, I mean, I'm ready this time, and it's a total different feel knowing that you're going to get to jump into something when it's new than when it's already
and
been.
It's much easier to jump into stuff too, or to kind of follow stuff as it progresses now with, you know, I mean, back in the day when 11 came out,
you had to read, like, you know, Game
like
Informer.
Like, yeah. I mean, Chin even said she didn't even have internet.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
A lot of people probably did, but I mean, there was still people that didn't, and, you know, it was still this kind of up and coming thing. And, you know, now everybody has internet, you know, people have it on their phone. And it's information is a lot easier to get a hold of.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, it's a lot easier to follow stuff like this. So, you know, hopefully our intent is to do this show and update the website to, you know, kind of inform everybody of what's going on with the game. And, you know, we're looking forward to doing this when the game comes out and talking to people on the forums and getting emails and stuff. And I think it's going to be great. One of the, you know, best things about Final Fantasy XI is its online community.
Absolutely.
There's not a doubt in my mind that'll carry over into 14. So sure. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Definitely.
Heck yes.
So this is really a new process for all of us, covering something like this and talking about it and thinking about it. I mean, this is for a lot of us is really brand new. And so this is a lot of new territory for us, especially from, you know, from a podcast standpoint, you know, talking about what could possibly be instead of, you know, concrete facts and what actually is. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a different experience. So I hope listeners will understand that this is also a new experience for us, and that this is going to be a learning period for us, and we're going to be you know, when the game comes out, there is going to be a whole different side of this podcast that you have not seen. And and we're really looking forward to being able to bring you a really cool, inventive new product, and all focused around Final Fantasy 14. So that's really our, you know, that's kind of where we're coming from here. And I think that's kind of important to mention. And you know, like Fusion said, we've got email, we've got forums, we've got ways that you can communicate to us, and that's really that we really want to encourage that. We want you to become a part of the show and to interact, and you know, we want to have a bunch of different ways for you to interact, but right now you got the forums and you got the email, podcast@orzopedia.com, and also you can check out the forums at orzopedia.com. so I don't think that there's much else that we can talk about. We are going to be looking at the upcoming GamesCon conference. That's going on. Where is that happening? Where is that?
That's in Germany.
Germany. So we'll be looking at the information coming out of there. And, of course, updating the front page of Orzopedia.com. That's the quickest way to get all of that brand new juicy info. But we'll be back here in the studio talking about the new info that we hear about at GamesCon, and as well as TGS, because there's got to be some big stuff happening.
There's
got to
be. It's Tokyo Game Show. There can't not be anything.
Exactly. Tokyo.
You're like a little kid, like before Christmas.
Oh, I know. Yep. It's and you guys got to understand something. I am really impatient. I am really, really impatient. And getting this excited over something, you know, and having no place to put all that energy is, you know, it can be frustrating sometimes. But definitely a lot of hype around this, a lot of excitement. And I think that we're just excited as any of our listeners are for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I am.
There's probably people more excited than us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, all right. That's. I think that that's time for us to get out of here. Thanks for joining us. Again, podcast at orzopedia.com and check out the website at orzopedia.com. And that's really it for our very first episode. Thanks so much for listening to Aetherite Radio, the official podcast of the orzopedia.com. I'm Aniro. For Chinchilla and FusionX. See you later.